Welcome to the first episode of the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast. In each episode, we'll speak with an author of a featured article in the monthly journal Oncology. After hearing a summary of their work, an outside expert in that area will give their perspective on the article and the overall topic. This week, we examine strategies for overcoming disparities for patients with hematologic malignancies and for improving enrollment on clinical trials, written by Drs. Stephanie Williams, Amy Ayers, Michelle Hildebrandt, Lorna McNeil, and Christopher Flowers. To get a better understanding of the piece, we'll first hear from Dr. Flowers of the MD Anderson Cancer Center.
I'm Dr. Christopher Flowers. I'm the chair of the Department of Lymphoma and Myeloma at the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas. And I'm pleased to review with you our article on strategies for overcoming disparities in patients with hematologic malignancies and for improving enrollment on clinical trials. In this article, we review a multitude of factors that can contribute to disparities in outcomes for patients who have hematologic malignancies. While much interest and research has gone into cancer health disparities and solid tumors, relatively less focus has been available for patients with hematologic malignancies. Our group in particular, along with others in the field, have started to change that focus towards addressing some disparities for patients with leukemia, myeloma, and lymphoma. In particular, a comprehensive approach to addressing cancer health disparities for hematologic malignancies is necessary. These should include the integration of an understanding of the biology of the disease, how that biology differs for groups that experience disparities in outcomes, an integration of those biological factors with clinical factors for the disease, socio-demographic factors, and population-based factors to be able to create a comprehensive multi-level model for understanding cancer disparities. In this review article, we describe one such multi-level model and illustrate how it can be applied to be able to understand outcomes at the local level using population-based statistics, using the state of Georgia and the state of Texas as an example, and then to apply national strategies for addressing cancer health disparities at a local level where they are applied in each of those components of the multi-level model. In addition, one of the major challenges for addressing cancer health disparities is that patient populations who experience disparities are the patient populations that are most likely to benefit from clinical trials that may have capacity to improve survival outcomes. However, these are also the patient populations that are least likely to participate in clinical trials. And so it's very important to try to address clinical trial participation strategies as a component of addressing cancer health disparities for patients with blood cancers. Groups like ours, including co-author of this article, Lorna McNeil, who is chair of the Department of Cancer Health Disparities at MD Anderson, have been leaders in developing these strategies for improving enrollment on clinical trials. Some of the broad themes to increase participation in clinical trials include a commitment from cancer center leadership, investigator training and mentoring, community engagement to improve enrollment, patient individual level engagement, and operational practices. These include identifying minority and other leaders within the cancer center who can impact faculty diversity and create broad outreach programs for both staff and patients, and form an active presence in the community to create an informed population so that an informed population can make informed decisions about clinical trial enrollment. Once the research population and the clinical trial staff are informed, they can begin to shift to engagement and education of community-based partners. Recognizing, understanding, and addressing barriers in the local environment to clinical trials participation is the key to community engagement that can help to improve trial enrollment. unique strategies to address health disparities in clinical trial enrollment also may be necessary to address the current environment of the COVID-19 pandemic. We have aimed in this review to identify a variety of factors that contribute to survival rates among patients with hematologic malignancies, highlighting some of the possible reasons why patients may experience cancer disparities and some strategies for overcoming those disparities. Recognition of these factors, however, is only the first step. Institutions and healthcare leaders must work to educate both their staff, surrounding communities in a proactive manner, utilizing our proposed framework and other strategies to disseminate a comprehensive method to improve outcomes for patients who experience disparities in outcomes currently.
For a peer-reviewed perspective, I spoke with Dr. Julie Vose of the University of Nebraska Medical Center. Dr. Vose gave her insight on the importance of a diverse clinical trial and the factors that lead to disparities among patients with hematologic malignancies. So I was hoping we could start with, you know, just generally speaking, what is the significance of ensuring that clinical trials are representative of the local population?
Well, outcome of clinical trials can be very different in different populations of patients. For example, what happens in a pediatric population is much different than what happens in a population of patients that are age 70 and 80. The tolerance of the medications, the outcomes of the medications, and the disease itself can be very different. So it's really important to be able to test the outcomes of different treatments in populations that are representative of that area, and not to be so selective, because a lot of times the outcomes of the clinical trials really aren't representative of the total population by age or other characteristics.
And so the article touches on this a little bit with the, you know, enrollment of minorities in clinical trials being low, which would typically result in that smaller sample size. Mm-hmm. What in general gives professionals the confidence to trust data coming from a small sample size?
Well, it's really important when physicians or other healthcare professionals or the public for that matter reads this information that they understand that what the patient population is, and is that population similar to what really occurs with that disease. And a lot of times clinical trial populations are not representative because they do have very highly selective eligibility criteria, which unfortunately often makes some minorities and other groups difficult for them to comply with those or to be able to be seen at centers where clinical trials are done. So it is important to read between the lines and make sure that the information is representative.
And so you alluded to it a little bit, the role of inclusion and exclusion criteria in forming a population. That comes up a little bit in the article. Specifically, you know, they mention African-American patients are more likely to have diabetes and hypertension, which would exclude them from a trial. You know, what is the overall importance of this criteria during recruitment, and what are some potential risks of implementing, you know, less strict criteria to ultimately include a more representative population?
So what happens is a lot of times the clinical trials, especially in the past, have been so restrictive that it's impossible to get your average patient on a trial. And the reason for doing that is they don't want to see more adverse events, and they want to make sure that the drug or treatment is tested in a population that would be best suited to get a good outcome. But then when we try to look at that information in the general population and look at the drug, again, they often have results that are much worse than was shown in the clinical trial. So there's a big push to try to have inclusion criteria that are less strict and more along with what we see in everyday practice to be able to get the information in these patient populations that are more consistent with patients in the general public.
And so with the steps to design a trial that the authors talk about without health disparities, they touch a little bit about creating national statistics on disparities, so to ultimately better understand obstacles. What do you think should be some of the focal points of that data, and how would that lead to a more proportional enrollment of minorities?
Well, definitely the eligibility criteria being less strict would be one thing that would help, and that would be able to broaden the patients who would be eligible for the trial and get into the trial. But there's many other barriers, unfortunately, such as cost, and the article also touches on that a lot of times we do have to make sure the patients have good insurance, even when they're on clinical trials and portion of their treatments being paid for by clinical trials, because there's often standard of care things that need to be paid for by insurance. In addition to that, we need to make sure the patients have social support. Can they get to their appointments? Can they get to their CAT scan? Those sorts of things, as well as family support and support for their overall general health. So there's lots of issues to look at and to try to help with social support as much as possible.
And so talking a little bit about the insurance part and location, the study links rural populations as less likely having to have private insurance and more likely to be in a lower socioeconomic class than metropolitan populations. And so they mentioned that some researchers and studies believe zip codes actually supersede genetic codes when it comes to access of quality care. Do you agree with this idea? And how much of a factor do you think location does play in accessing quality health care?
Well, location does play a part. And there are actually many different studies showing that patients that are treated in less populous areas or more rural areas do, unfortunately, in many diseases, have a worse outcome as compared to being treated at academic medical centers, for example, in larger metropolitan areas. It is difficult to tell for sure if it's because they don't have insurance, because they have to travel for appointments, because the treatment itself is maybe not as cutting edge in some of those areas. And so it's difficult to tell those different aspects. But the bottom line is that unfortunately often patients do not do as well in those areas. So I think we need to do two things. We need to make sure the patients who need the kind of top level care can get to the academic medical centers. At the same token, we need to make sure that we can get the treatment out to the more less urban or more rural areas to be able to see that they get as cutting edge care as we can, given the situation and circumstances. The insurance issue is a problem, and in other countries where there's more generalized healthcare, they don't have as much of a problem in this, although it still exists. And so it'd be nice to be able to get all the patients at least some basic healthcare so that they can be able to enroll in clinical trials.
And so the authors also write that, quote, biological, environmental, and social or institutional factors ultimately lead to cancer care disparities. If targeted correctly, which of these areas do you believe can make the biggest impact in addressing the issue?
I'll be honest with you. I think that social workers and social care, as well as trying to get the patients the insurance that they need, insurance coverage they need, is the biggest issue. A lot of times, even if they do have coverage, the patients are unable to come to their appointments or unable to afford oral medications, for example. So to have that additional support for the patients is probably the biggest thing that we need.
And so shifting gears a little bit, towards the end of the piece, the article touches on a little bit about the COVID-19 pandemic and how it's changed the way patients are being treated right now. How frequently do you think we will see these strategies implemented to treat patients in a post-COVID world? And then specifically, which tactics do you think will stick, whether it's telemedicine or delaying optional surgeries?
Yeah, so I think the one good thing that's come out of this whole pandemic is the telehealth video visits. And they're very helpful and very popular with patients. For those patient visits where we don't really need to examine the patient, they work great, especially if they don't necessarily need blood tests or CAT scans or things like that, and you're just doing a checkup on the patient. So I'm hopeful that those will stick and we'll be able to do those where appropriate, and they're certainly not appropriate in every circumstance. A couple other things I think that were good out of this was that we were able to, for example, ship investigational oral medication to patients directly without having to have them go to a research pharmacy to pick it up and make an extra trip. And that was a positive thing, I think, for patients. doing some consenting over the phone or electronically, as well as information electronically, I think was also a positive thing. So there have been some good things that hopefully we can take forward into this. Also, I think it would behoove us to try to, again, simplify some of the clinical trials, make them not so onerous as for the patients or for the physicians or for the research infrastructure, and to be able to do some of these things remotely, not having the patient to have to come to the research center, but to be able to get labs or x-rays or things closer to home and do a lot of these visits by telehealth would be incredibly helpful.
And so while this seems like a larger systemic change that won't just happen overnight, what do you think professionals can do, whether they're just researching on a trial or treating patients who have cancer? What do you think they can do to individually help overcome these disparities?
Well, I think a lot of times we don't necessarily think about some of these patients. We are concerned that they wouldn't be able to enroll in a trial because they wouldn't be able to do the follow-up or do the studies they need to do. But I still think we need to present that to every patient equally and to be able to try to help them through that if they have issues in getting the appointments or whatever, to get them social work help and to be able to help them with whatever infrastructure support we can so they can have those opportunities.
All right, great. Well, those are all the questions I have for you, Dr. Bose. Thank you so much again for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Okay, thanks so much.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network.